IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello, and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We're always so happy to have you.
Especially on this Easter week. What a wonderful week. Although the weather's not behaving so far where we are here in Utah.
Well, but it is Good Friday. And I've just had the most amazing experience of running around Temple Square this morning. We're in Salt Lake City, Utah, and there is so much construction going on here.
They're completely redoing.
Oh, man.
Many of you know that.
You know that.
Haven't been to Salt Lake City, the normally beautiful Temple Square is like a war zone.
Oh, it looks like just a bomb dropped over there. But it is really amazing what they're doing. And there are sections that are totally beautiful and peaceful, and they're waiting for the tulips to pop out, but it's been cold and kind of snowing every day, and I don't know that they're going to make it. There's some crocus and some daffodils, but not very many.
And we're going to get to our three-letter lesson today, but before we do, we want to talk a little more about Easter and about, you haven't told me yet what your experience was.
Oh, gosh, it was so amazing. There are hundreds of men over there and women guarding roads and so on. With orange jackets on, and it's the busiest I've ever seen it there. It's amazing.
The construction workers. Just like a little beehive.
Oh my goodness, it's amazing. But we are anticipating conference next weekend, and so it's everybody's busy, and we're hoping for some sunshine, so all those flowers will pop out.
The LDS Church has a semi-annual general conference where people come from all over the world, and they meet in the domed tabernacle that many of you, even if you're not from here, have seen pictures of. Historic pioneer building. They don't actually meet. That's where the tabernacle choir sings, but they have a bigger conference center right adjacent to this construction zone around the historic temple.
That holds about 20,000. But as I was walking and kind of jogging around there trying to get my blood going, it was such an amazing trip. I was listening to a podcast about Easter week and what happened each day and so on. And we got to Good Friday, which is where we are right as we're recording this. It is Good Friday. And it reminded me of years and years ago when we lived in London. We had a funny experience. In fact, you know what? You took the boys down south, and you bought this table that is behind us at an antique
shop. Was that at Easter?
Yes.
Well, we were headed for France.
But you stayed, and I brought the girls up, and you took the boys back and bought this table, and then I went on with the girls to Paris. And we were in the Cathedral of Notre Dame on Good Friday. I'll just never forget that Good Friday. It was.
This is way back, folks. This is back when our children were very small.
Yes, they were kids. It was the second time actually that we did this. So the girls were just young teenagers.
Second time we lived in London.
But anyway, it was amazing. We just had a glorious time going through there. And then when you think what that building has been through, and
since
all
then,
the fire and now the resurrection that it's going
what
through.
What made you think of that? That's
because
so long
it was
ago.
Good Friday on the day that we went into that building. It was amazing. And then on another Good Friday, I've had this stuff going through my brain here. On another Good Friday, when we were in New York City, we've had kids living in New York City for a long time. We were at St. Patrick's Cathedral on Good Friday. You remember that?
On Fifth Avenue. I do remember that now that you mention it.
We went in with our now then grown-up kids, and we listened to, I can't remember his name, the main guy.
Oh, the Archbishop of New York.
The Archbishop, yes. Oh, I'll think of his name after the podcast. But anyway, he gave the most beautiful speech about the last seven words of Christ, the last seven phrases of Christ.
Well,
honestly, it was fabulous.
Two comments. Number one, Linda, your brain works like your Apple phone. You wake up in the morning and look at it, and it tells you what you did on this day 10 years ago or 20 years ago. That's what your brain just did to you today. Good Friday.
That's right.
This many years ago. And I also want to say one of the beautiful things about Easter and Easter week is the richness and variety of Christian traditions in various denominations all around the world. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I think the unity of Christians becomes so evident at Easter. It's like, you know, maybe at other times in the year we're comparing this church with that church or this Christian doctrine with another interpretation of a Christian doctrine. But it seems like at Easter, there's this wonderful unity among Christians. And I think it's so beautiful that whatever denomination we are, we learn from the Christian traditions of other churches, other denominations, and no time is that more true than Easter. I mean, and the Catholic Church has such a rich and long tradition of celebrating Lent, and then of each day of the Easter week being so distinct and so
special,
special,
and
starting with Palm Sunday and culminating with Easter.
And last weekend, Palm Sunday, what a day that was when he rode in on that donkey rejoicing. Everybody's rejoicing, throwing palms and their clothing down in front of that donkey. It was so beautiful. I think it's so wonderful that our church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, has now caught the vision of Easter week, and many, many, many people did it beforehand, but Elder Gary Stevenson really gave an edict last year, maybe it was 2 years ago, come on, let's really celebrate Easter week. And so we've done
in every way we can.
Every way we can.
Because whether you agree with every specific detail of how this church or that church interprets Easter week, the important thing is the resurrection and the idea of all Christians all over the world really coming together on that. And another example of that, just so you'll know how we're trying to practice what we preach, is that there's a wonderful film that so many of you know about. It's a series. Talk about an ambitious undertaking to try to put together in a series, a TV series with 7 seasons, the life of Christ. And of course, it's called The Chosen. And it's pretty remarkable. And we decided, because we had a little time this weekend, it's in theaters now. And so we're going to 3 hours of it yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
We're not just saying 1 hour each of those three days.
3 hours each of those 3 days. So 9 hours. And that will be on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, before we celebrate Easter on Sunday.
Last night, it was remarkable. I mean, everything isn't perfect. Nobody knows exactly what happened, of course, but what great imaginations. And then to pull that together and then to have so many people excited about it, to help fund it and get it together. And this guy named Dallas Jenkins is amazing. He's pulled a team together that's really quite incredible.
So I guess you get the impression there, accurately so, that we're
Christians.
So excited. Well, yes, and that we're so excited about Easter. I think in some ways, no one doubts the worldwide veracity and excitement and universality of Christmas. I think Easter, in some ways, what it celebrates is more significant than Christmas.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so what a great thing to
think
about.
Of course, we couldn't have Easter without Christmas, but still, you know, it is really exciting. We love it. We love that our children are all into it. And one other thing before we go on is Lent. The Catholics have really got it right on Lent.
What do you give up?
Ash Wednesday and 40 days before Easter. They're actually thinking about Jesus 40 days before Easter. And our girls got started on this years ago, of doing something for Lent, giving up something for Lent. But this year, they have gone an extra mile. And one of them particularly, Sadie, bless her heart, has said, okay, this is what we're going to do. You can do it if you want, but you go to Matthew 25, and you go to the end, and we're going to do exactly what it says.
Feed the homeless, clothe the naked.
Visit
give
those
drink to those that are thirsty.
Yes,
visit
and do
those.
All that.
And she's doing it literally.
And she
one of those things.
Absolutely. I mean, she's getting people out of prison because she's a therapist. So every day.
Wait, she's getting them out?
She's getting them out of their prison.
Oh.
So it's, and then everybody's kind of caught the fire, and we went down and she called us one day and said, hey, we're missing two people down at the homeless shelter. Can you meet us down there in an hour? And we said, sure. And so we jumped in and we had such a good time.
So, and not only are we excited about Easter week, it also is a perfect segue into what we want to talk about today on Ours on the Road. And we want to get back to these three-letter lessons. Those of you who may not be longtime listeners may not know that this is number 35 in this little mini-series that we've stretched over many years, because we only do it every month or sometimes every 2 months, but we call it three-letter lessons. And again, not to belabor this for those of you who know about it, but we just feel like, you know, it's like hearkening all the way back to Benjamin Franklin and his idea of having a particular quality or word or characteristic or character trait that he would focus on and work on until it became part of who he was, part of his character. And others, many others have done similar things. And we've written some things in our books about adopting certain words or certain things that you really want to become part of who you are. And this three-letter lessons is sort of a culmination of that, because it's trying to winnow things down to one little three-letter word, and then have that word be like a little word peg that hangs somewhere in your brain and reminds you of a certain way you want to think or a way you want to be. And we've done 34 of these, and this is number 35. And the three-letter lesson for today is easy. Now, you may say, wait, that's four letters. But we always reduce it to three. And we're going to talk about what we think that means, partly in the biblical context. But should we say E-S-Y or E-Z-Y?
E-Z-Y.
E-Z-Y.
I mean, there's so many companies that...
E-Z-Y. So easy. So the question, Linda, is, I'll pose the question and you give the answer. That's kind of how we work together. I have all the questions and you have all the answers, right? So again, continuing with the biblical theme today, if we go to Matthew chapter 11. Let me read this in the King James Version, and then you read it in the New International Version. It says essentially the same thing, but watch for the word easy, and then let's talk about it. Okay. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly of heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light.
Wow, that's good in context. The New International Version says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. 29. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. 30. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light.
Now, all Christians resonate with those three verses, and many non-Christians, everyone really, who thinks about some of these beautiful questions of where do I find peace? Where do I find rest? Where do I find solace? And this is Jesus's answer. But we want to focus today on one, not only the very short verse 30, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light, but on one word in that verse, the word easy. And I think we ought to be honest, Linda, and say that one of the things we've had Linda and I have a lot of things that we see slightly differently, and we've learned to love the perspective of each other, and we've learned to give up on wanting to be alike on everything we do. In fact, we've gone so far beyond that and decided that the greatest thing about being married, and certainly about our marriage, is all that we can learn from each other and the different perspectives. But one of the running discussions has been sort of your general life philosophy and mine, which I really way sort of characterized in this. But Linda, and correct me if I'm wrong, but one of Linda's hallmarks of life is hard. And one of my sort of efforts to convince myself maybe is life is easy.
And you know,
and
what?
I think I've got Jesus on my side here.
But the reason that life is easy for you is because I make it easy.
Oh, it's because of you.
Because I'm doing the hard stuff. I mean, take for example.
No.
All you have to do is come to the table and eat. Well, you have to clear off the snow this year because it's been snowing. But you really fell into that.
I kind of set myself up for that one.
But it is true that I think a lot of things are hard, and you think a lot of things are easy. So
we got to take a little break, but we'll explain that further. And what I'm really trying to say, Linda, is I think we should always be looking for ways to make things simpler and easier.
And I agree.
Okay.
All right.
We'll be right back after this brief break.
Welcome back to Ayers on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back talking about
the word easy.
Yes.
What does it mean in the biblical sense? And what does it mean in general?
And what does hard mean too? We're going to throw that in there. But it is true that you really find you make everything easy somehow.
Well, I don't know that I make it easy, but I do look for ways to simplify. And I think you're doing that more, and you're actually better at it in some ways than I am. But let's think about the word from, let's move away from the Bible, but let's broaden the discussion to a discussion of the word, the very interesting word, easy. You know, I'm a big sports guy, and Linda's a big sports girl in the last several years. I'll tell you, this has become a fan of a lot of sports. But one of the phrases that's always interesting, and it's really applicable, it's really true, is the greatest athletes make it look easy. The greatest, it's not just sports, right? The violinist we saw the other day makes incredibly difficult things look easy.
Yeah, that they do.
And why is that? Why can a master of something?
A violin, I mean.
Yeah. Why can he make something so almost incomprehensibly difficult? How can he make it look easy? Because he's mastered it, right?
Right.
He has become so competent, or has so much help, spiritual help, or confidence in whatever, that the hard can be made to look easy. And another way of saying that, when something is made to look easy, it also is made to look beautiful. I mean, when someone has become so good at something, whether you're thinking a picture in your mind, whatever example you want, a ballerina, a violinist, a basketball player, someone who has just, when it looks easy, it is also something of beauty. And there is a difference between a 9.9 and a 10. You know, we were saying that the other day, watching this unbelievable 17-year-old, he just turned 18 actually, violinist play some of the hardest violin music ever made. And it flowed. It looked easy. And I was thinking, you know, it's like I remember as a boy watching Nadia Comăneci at the Olympics, the Romanian gymnast who got the first perfect 10 ever given in Olympic competition, and thinking the difference between 9.9 and 10 is really, it's a difference of beauty.
Right.
When something is virtually perfect, it is, there's a beauty to it that is not found elsewhere.
Well, and I think you work really hard at writing, but it is easy for you because you have a gift. I mean, you do have to have a certain gift to be a master violinist. I mean, just anybody can't do that.
Although they say 10,000 hours.
Yeah, they say, and you can play something beautiful, but I mean something 10 at the,
yeah,
you
10,
know, 10.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to have a really special gift, but it is, and by the time they get to 10, it seems easy to them too, even though they've gone through the years and years of hard, really hard work.
So let me try this, and I don't know how you'll respond to this, Linda, but let me try two sort of different ways of explaining the idea of why easy is a three-letter lesson, why we should work toward making things easy. Let me do sort of a spiritual explanation and then a temporal or a non-spiritual, just a practical one, and see what you make of it and where you take it. I think what Jesus is saying clearly, and I'm oversimplifying this, he's saying my yoke is easy. And that's, we have a big yoke in our house. Several of our kids have found old yokes. A yoke is a big piece of wood that links two powerful oxen together and allows them, it distributes the weight. And if one is stronger than the other, he can compensate for the weaker one, and on we could go on about yokes. But Jesus says, my yoke is easy. In other words, if you take my yoke upon you and learn from me. And I think clearly one of the core meanings there is life can be easy if you're doing my work, if you're doing it my way, if you're doing it the right way. The Spirit, my Spirit, will help you. And things that are hard or impossible will become possible and easy, not because of you, but because you have the help of God. You have divine help. So clearly that's one meaning. But moving now to the secular, I think people who go around thinking life is hard end up making life harder sometimes. You know, it's like, it's hard, it's getting worse, it's hard, I have more than I can do, on. And there's no question that they're right. They're speaking factually, but if they were to say, but can I relax? Can I take a breath? Can I sort of slow down? Can I see this in perspective? What's really important here and what isn't important here? What should I focus on? And it's that simplifying sort of deep breath. Let me look at this again and let me sharpen my saw rather than just cutting all the time. Let me pull back and plan. Let me prioritize. There is a practical skill of making life easier by prioritizing and doing the work mentally. One great religious leader, Joseph Smith, said, when a man works by faith, he works by mental effort rather than by physical force. And there is something there. All know it.
There is. And I think so often I think, this is so hard. This is, how am I going to get through this? This is so hard. There's even, you know, Easter dinner for 35.
What you're thinking of right now.
Yeah, I just started out thinking, well, this will be easy. We'll just have people help, and they are helping and so on. But then you go through phases of, no, this is hard. I've got to get this, and I've got to get
details.
This, and how many people there are, and I've got to make the assignments. But then you think, no, it just change your mind. We can do this. If you just get a positive state of mind thinking, we can do this. It's going to work. It's going to happen one way or the other. Simplify as much as you can. And then it does become easy.
And I think you're exactly right. Simplify and prioritize. That's the other key word, isn't it? Because using that example, you start thinking, what's really the important thing here? Is it that the meal's perfect? Well, that's a wonderful thing. We want to make it as good as we can. Or that we're all together. We're a family. We're it's Easter. We're talking to each other. We're relating. And you start saying, that's what matters. The food is a nice thing too.
And that's easy for you to say.
I know.
And then I woke up this morning saying, well, I don't have any Easter decorations. What did I do with those? We haven't done Easter dinner for a few years. So anyway, it really is so interesting to keep in mind that you can make it hard or you can make it easy. I mean, you know, or you can say, we're just going to get through this, or you can say, we're going to rejoice in doing this.
Yeah, exactly. So I want you to focus on those two words, you listeners, simplifying and prioritizing, and they really go together. I did a book years ago. It's still kind of one of my favorite books. I wish I could do another edition of this and get it back, but it's I can't even think that which simile is the on the cover.
Oh, don't just sit
there. Oh yeah, don't just sit. The name of the book is Don't Just Sit There. And what it is basically is taking a lot of old cliches and flipping them around in almost backwards way and saying it actually makes more sense this way. So the one that's referenced in the title is, you know, what your grandma probably used to say to you or your mother, don't just sit there, do something. Don't just sit there, do something. And of course you flip it around and it's like what we're talking about now. Don't just do something, sit there and think it through, plan it, create it spiritually, decide what matters and what doesn't. And then it'll flow and it will actually be easy, not in the sense that it's didn't take effort, but it took mental effort instead of frantic sort of physical effort. So, in fact, I'd say there's two little things in that old book that really apply. One is instead of saying, don't just sit there, do something, just be active, do stuff all the time frantically. No, don't just do something, sit there. But the other one that I think is even maybe more fun, and the other thing, frankly, that my mother used to say to me, if a thing's worth doing, Ricky, it's worth doing well. Isn't that how it goes?
Oh, absolutely.
If a thing's worth doing, it's worth doing well. And we love flipping that one around and saying, if a thing's just barely worth doing, then just barely do it.
Make it easy. Just barely do it.
Because a lot of the stuff we do really isn't hardly worth doing at all. We just do it because we need to. And, you know, I mean,
I know.
Trivia.
It's
so
trivia.
Much trivia in our lives, especially on our phones.
Especially on our phones. Oh my goodness, this new generation, this next generation, and that next generation. We just had our first great grandchild. And what world is that going to be when that child grows up? Yeah. It's just getting more and more complicated. You have complicated stuff coming at you all the time, just in your hand, which our parents could never have imagined in a million years. But it is so important to just keep trying to think, simplify, sort this out. Is this really important? If it's not, let it go.
And so what you're really doing is you're asking yourself kind of permanently, it's always in your mind, what's real? What matters? What makes a difference? What has real value? And I mean, I know those are all complicated questions, but just having the idea in mind of let's do the important things and let's quit doing all the things that aren't important. And part of it is sort of where we are in our minds, but also where we are physically, don't you think? I mean, cities.
Yeah.
If you are in Mumbai, India, in the middle of town, your senses are so bombarded by so many things. I mean, it's true in any big city, but some people in those cities are able to live in their own little bubble. And I don't mean that in the negative. They're able to live within their own mind and see everything whirling around them, but not be caught up in the franticness of it. And which is easier to do if you're on a mountain path or walking by a stream or out in nature. Then you can have this peace and this idea that, yes, God's way is easy. God's yoke is easy. But in frantic life, can we find that place in our own heads and our own hearts?
Well, and you're kind of speaking to a certain slice of humanity that can do that. I mean, when you're in Mumbai, you see the poverty, you see families on sidewalks building little fires for dinner and living in a tent behind them. And then there are people in war-torn countries that are just have lost loved ones and are just starving. I mean, you know, there's certainly a umbrella of easy that we can do that other people can't when they're in the depths of despair. And so there's certain degrees of easy.
So to summarize, our wish for ourselves and for you today on this three-letter lesson is, first, on the more secular definition, find a way to make life easy, not in the sense that you're not into it and doing all you can and being all you can be, but easy in the sense that you are prioritized and you're trying to simplify and you're seeing the things that really matter. And bring in the spiritual definition, especially if you're a Christian. But you could say the same about a Buddhist or about a Hindu. And in some ways, Eastern religions are better than in general terms at the calming center, the meditation, the peace, and so on.
Absolutely.
So but bring in that second spiritual element and essentially say there is a greater power. And that power can make it easy. That power can bring to me the spirit and the wonder that can make life easy in the sense of being true and on course and peaceful.
Well said. And so our hope this week is that we can all think of life as easy instead of hard in different ways, maybe than we have before. I've learned a lot just thinking about this, but we hope that you have taken away something to think about this week when it comes to easy. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Hikers on the Road.
Bye till then.